Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
I'll put it to you very simply. You're just way too much for yourselves. You don't know what to do with your life. And you don't understand that there are people and social conditions and religious creeds and relationships piled one on top of another just waiting to tell you who to be and what to do. The reason that you are exhausted, and most people are, you needn't exhaust yourself with trying to look intelligent. Is because of all the weight that you're carrying around. You know, you look at a human being and even a slender one, which is getting harder to find, I might add. And their faces are long, not because they're thin. Their shoulders are hunched. There's a weariness in their eyes. I'll never forget, as long as I live, I was in India many, many, many years ago. And perhaps of all the things that stayed with me from that trip was sitting in a coach car on a train rumbling across the southern part of India, filled with goats and chickens and ducks and men and women and their children, and directly across on the bench from me was a child, and its eyes had already died. I'll never forget that as long as I can see the child's face even as I'm saying it to you. I'll never forget that as long as I live, that the environment, the culture, the parentage, the world itself of that, of that social system had already stolen the life from this child. And I'm making a point here, poignant, I hope, that if you were to see yourselves on any given day, especially when the day has wrapped up, you know, like towards the 4, 5, 6 o'clock, you can watch people and the strain of carrying around what they've carried around all day begins to show on them. They may wake up with a fairly fresh face, you know, because some of us wake up and we think, ah, today, you know, I'm going to do this, I'm going to get that, I'm going to make this happen. And desire fuels a certain fire in us that animates us. But it doesn't take long for that animation created by desire's fires to begin to wane and wax. And suddenly you start to see people and their faces are kind of long and drawn and they're tired. And they can't even pay attention at the simplest level to anything, which, as you'll see when we get into tonight's talk, exacerbates the condition. Because we're going to talk about something alarmingly simple. And I think I'll start with the, any of you remember Indiana Jones, the Raiders of the Lost Ark? He was searching for something, the Holy Grail or something like that. What was that called? Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. If you don't know it, most people saw it. At the end, when he finally found the place with his father, Sean Connery, and I won't do a bad impersonation of him, the last task, and this is just a play on myths and legends and things from thousands of years ago and thousands of years old in terms of their truth. The last task that he had was that he had to pick the actual Holy Grail, the cup, from amongst 20 or 30 other cups that could be the Grail. And the old knight Templar, the old fellow standing there, had been there for hundreds of years in the movie, guarding the cups. Said, look, if you're a true man, you'll know the true cup. Pretty simple. And by the way, if you're not, and you drink from this cup, you're going to look like something that special effects really makes look bad on the screen. You'll suddenly turn sallow, your face will shrink in, you'll look like you have no energy, then you will ignite in flames and fall into a heap of ashes on the floor. So you choose wisely. And as the story goes, there was an aggressive, cruel other man that had followed Indiana there, and he had this woman who had betrayed Indiana pick at the cups, and she was this famous archaeologist, and she picked the cup that she was sure was the Grail. You've seen the movies, you know, and he takes the water and he drinks it and he goes, ah, this is it. And then all of a sudden that look of sheer horror comes over his face because he realized that he's been betrayed by his own choice. That he could not discern the true from the false. She could not. And that the penalty was death. Now, this story is not this is not made up in movies these days. These are stories that are old stories. Anybody remember the story of the lady, the tiger, that was the tiger at the door, the lady and the tiger. And numerous other legends and myths like that, that were all connected with a person being thrown into a position where, in order for them to pass this initiation, this test, whatever it may have been, to win the princess, to find the treasure, to bring the treasure back up out from underneath the ground, whatever it may be, that they had to be able to know the true from the false. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight. We're going to talk about this great necessity that all human beings have, if they could see it, to be able to know what's true and what's not. I mean, just think for a second, and I want you to. How much pain, how much trouble, how much stress, how much fatigue is there in your life on a day-to-day basis because you weren't able to choose the true from the false? Think about it. How many things do you carry with you from your past? Problems that are still unresolved, that had you been able in the moment to see things as they were factually, you wouldn't have made the choices that you did, you wouldn't have followed the lines that you went along, and you wouldn't be sitting a day, a week, a year, or 20 years later regretting the choice that you made because you got betrayed by that person, that situation, or whatever it is that you were sure, which is a big point here, that you were sure in the moment of choice was the right choice for you. So can you see what an extraordinary power it would be for an individual to be able to discern in the moment what is true and what is false? Wouldn't that be something special? We see the thing is that you do have that. Human beings are created with the ability to discern what is true and what is false. We are each given the capacity to be able to see what serves us, what doesn't serve us, what is ours and what is not ours. And the reason that I'm making that transition between the ability to see what's true and false, between what is ours and what is not ours, is because everyone here has had some experience with being able to discern what is true and what is not. And then I'll show you how it connects with what is yours and what is not yours. For instance, how many of you know a bad note when you hear it? You know, if someone's singing and you know, they reach for that A and they barely hit the E sharp or whatever. You know, they barely hit F. And you hear it. There's no question in your mind that person didn't make the note. Now, how do you know they didn't make the note? This is at a simple level. It sounds bad. To what? No, it sounds bad. You have in you A. You have in you that note. And that note knows what is not its own kind. Even if you can't sing it, you know what is not it. Even people with tone deaf people, they know what is not the note. You hear a truth. You hear a truth. You read some passage, and when you read it, you go, oh, yes, I know that. Even though I didn't know that I knew that, maybe the moment before, but as soon as I read it, as soon as I hear it, the second that I see it, there is an instantaneous resonance inside of me. And the resonance is the instantaneous recognition of that as being true. And further, and to the point of what is knowing true and false versus what is yours and not yours, is that in the moment that you see or hear or know that to be true, the reason you know it is because it has always been inside of you. You know your own. You have the capacity to know your own. But where is it gone? If you can understand the question, here I'm taking pains to prove to you that we are not only created with the ability to have a certain resonance with what is true, what is timeless, what is eternal, what is good, a resonance with it, but that the resonance we have with it isn't because of the thing, but because of what it stirs in us. So that if something is true and right and good and it stirs in us what is true and right and good, that means that what is true and right and good lives in us and is ours and is accessible. Accessible. To use as a judge. To meet the moments, to be able to discern in those moments the difference between what is actually yours and what is not yours. And you don't know what is yours and not yours. Because if you knew what was yours and what wasn't yours, then you would never say to a negative state, I. You would never claim a thought or feeling that had cruelty in it towards another human being. You would never say I to anything that defeats you if you knew what was true, what was false, if you knew what was yours and what wasn't yours. How many of you are understanding what we're talking about so far? Because we constantly find ourselves all day long, in fact, right back to the beginning of the talk, the reason that you are tired, the reason you are stressed is because you have gone through the day in relationship essentially with what isn't yours. I'll ask you to see it. When you saw what was true, when you heard what was true, when you read that thing that inspired you, did you have more energy immediately in the moment of that resonance and relationship, or did you have less? Which was it? You had more. What do you get from what you think about all day long?
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at GuyFinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.
What do you get from what you care about all day long? I'm asking you to look at this. I'm asking you, truly asking you to look. And I know it's hard. No one wants to sit and say that. I don't want to see this. This is exactly an example of what I don't want to look at that. You know, ask me to look at something else. Because you're saying that I need to look at what I call my own. And that clearly, just from the short introduction, what I call my own can't really be my own. And obviously I don't recognize it as not being my own, because if it were my own, it wouldn't deplete me. If it were my own, it wouldn't make me afraid. I don't think you take any of this seriously enough. You listen, and you know, you give your psychological homage and you do your duty, but the awakening of a man or a woman requires that they become totally concerned with this present conspiracy that they are living out. And the total conspiracy that you are living out, that you don't know you're living out, is that all day long, day in and day out, you listen to things tell you that certain things are yours that aren't. Who grabs a millstone for a safety vest? Do you know what a millstone is? Maybe I shouldn't use ancient language. A millstone was one of those large, round granite rocks that crushed the grain. A millstone. Who grabs one of those thinking this will help me float? Do you? Yes, you do. Every day, that's what you do. Every time that you give yourself over to thinking about yourself, you have done exactly that. And I'm going to show it to you. We're going to go over a list that I've prepared. And it's a list that has in it 10 things that you think are yours that aren't. And the reason that we're going to go over this list of 10 things that you think are yours that are not is because we're going to examine at some point the root of how it is that this happens to us. Because I'll ask you a question before we get to the list. Why can't you leave what has passed alone? It's a simple question, isn't it? How many of you spend any time at all during the day thinking about what happened a minute ago, an hour ago, or 20 years ago? Everyone on earth does. Why can't you leave what has passed alone? Does anybody know? You see, those are not correct answers. And the truth is that I could sit and take answers and just leave empty space on this tape. But you're not going to get it. But I'm going to ask you a few more questions so that you can. Why can't you stop thinking about what did or did not happen to you in your life? Why can't you stop? How come you can't leave the future alone? How many of you think a lot about tomorrow and the next day? Take thought. Why can't you leave what may be alone? Which is the same as fear, isn't it? Start thinking about what may be. Well, here's a person and there's a thought comes up and it's a concern. Now you can say it's an intelligent concern, and I say anything that causes you fear has no intelligence in it at all. So here comes what may be tomorrow. What's going to happen? How come you can't leave that alone? Apart from what's practical, but we're not talking about practical now. How come you can't leave it alone?
I can't stand.
Why can't you leave others alone? Why can't you leave others alone? I'm not just talking about those poor people whose ear you get into on a daily basis when you've got a problem. I mean in your own mind. Monkeying with people all the time, trying to figure out how to fix their lives, get them straightened out, make them see the light. How many of you try to make people see the light? Why can't you leave yourself alone? Why can't you leave yourself alone? I mean, wouldn't that be a good thing? Why can't I forget the past, the future, others? How come I can't leave myself alone? How come wherever I am, there's always this fellow with a cattle prod until I'm so exhausted I pass out or eat something, and then I get prodded again? How come you can't leave yourself alone? Do you know why? Anybody? Because you're identified with your own thoughts. That's why you can't leave what has passed alone. That's why you can't leave the future alone. That's why you can't leave others alone. That's why you can't leave yourself alone. Because day in and day out, you are identified with your thoughts about these things. So that all the time that's going on, this thought about him, this thought about then, this thought about when, this thought about me and mine, and all these thoughts all the time working their way inside of you, and here's the point, you think they are you. Which is why you can't leave them alone. You think these thoughts are you. They are not you. They are an imposter. They are the falsehood. They are the lie. But you have been tricked just as surely as the... How many of you know what a cuckoo bird is? And I'm not talking about when you look in the morning in the mirror before you fix your hair. The cuckoo finds a nest. She lays her egg in the nest of another bird. The egg hatches in the nest of the other bird. And the egg of a cuckoo is generally 3 times larger for one thing than the eggs that it laid with. I've seen a cuckoo egg inside of a finch nest. And that cuckoo egg will hatch. And the cuckoo chick will push the chicks of the true bird out the door. And that mother will raise that cuckoo bird as her own. And if you've ever seen any of these Discovery movies, that the bird feeding the cuckoo chick can be a third the size of the chick and never know that it's not her own. And never know that it's not her own, just like you don't know your own. And you don't know your own. It just makes the simplest logic if you look at it. How can it be my own if it makes me cry? How can it be my own if it fills me with fear? How can that be my own? How can it be my own if it sets me against someone else? How can that be my own? When the instant that I'm set against another person, I've already set myself against my own best interests. How can that be my own? How can anything that I call my own be my own if, for possessing it, no matter how long I do, by its possession I'm punished? How can that be? I mean, it's obvious. It should be obvious that if I'm sitting at home and a thought comes through my mind about poor me or who did what or when they're going to get it or what's going to happen when or no matter what it is, and it produces in me any kind of conflict, clearly beyond the shadow of a doubt, that which I take to be my own cannot be my own, but I don't see it as that. Why? What's happened that a man, a woman, can't sit in their own home? For some of you, right now as I'm talking, and not recognize the imposter. How is that even, what has happened to the human race? These are very serious questions, because I don't know if you see as far as I can see, but I can tell you that if you can't see what happens to a human being who continues to claim what is not his own as being his own, I'll tell you what happens. The person dies an empty nothing. They give their whole soul to serving something that never had any intention except stealing it. Period. Just as surely as that chick inside of that nest placed there by the cuckoo could care less about the mother that has to serve it. It's serving something else altogether, isn't it? And it's the same with this nature that presently has passed itself off inside of the human being to the point where the person thinks to themselves, here the thought comes in and goes, okay. So let's get to it. Those thoughts that you take as yours are not. Period. Now I'm going to prove it to you. Take a deep breath, because we do have to get to this list. I said that those thoughts are not you, but that they've made them, but they have made you think that they are. Let's look at it. See if we can see a little light on it so that we have a proper interior tension, proper tension in the moment of our lives where we can understand and be able to recognize what's mine and what's not.
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit guyfinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
One reason the wind of good fortune is often found at the back of people who are successful in life is because these individuals are usually found moving ahead of it in anticipation of its arrival. Hi, this is Dr. Ellen Dickstein. The engaging words of best-selling author Guy Finley remind us that real success in life is a relationship between ourselves and a timeless greatness that lives within us. Each week, you can receive a powerful, life-affirming message from Guy, guaranteed to help you succeed with your wish for a new life. Each brief, uplifting insight reminds you that nothing can stop you from knowing the higher happiness your heart longs for. To receive Guy Finley's free weekly key lessons, just visit guyfinley.com. Join the thousands of grateful individuals who are learning how to make themselves and our world a better place. Visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com.
Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
How many of you know what meteorological conditions are? Fancy word for weather. Weather. Weather person gets on, he's got these maps, he says, in the north there's going to be fog, in the south there's going to be freezing rain, and maybe to the east there's going to be a drier condition because a high pressure system's moving in, and certainly in the westerly mountains rain's going to fall until the evening. And he talks about conditions that appear because of a dynamic in the weather system itself. A relationship between all of the air, the temperature, the humidity, and the ground. And that all of these things conspire to actually produce these conditions that are called weather phenomena. Thought is exactly the same. Thought is exactly the same. Inside of you, there is the earth, there is the water, there is the fire, there is the air. And these conditions inside of a human being are latent potential powers to animate thoughts that have been stored inside of that human being through experience, images that have been put together by the mind trying to understand itself. So that all throughout one's life, all the time, thought formulating what this is, what that means, what it'll bring, it has a pleasure, it remembers the image so that it can get the pleasure again. And all of these thoughts, billions of them, and not just yours, by the way. All sitting inside of what a human being is, and your mind is not what you are. Your mind is an instrument that accesses where thought dwells. And in that world that is greater than the mind, where thought is, all day long, here comes a certain census, here comes a system, here comes somebody walking up. As they start to walk up, the meteorological conditions are perfect, and me appears. Me is the one who's afraid. Me is the one who needs to do something here. Me is the one who never got the break. And every one of these shifts in the pattern of life through its own changes stirs inside of this sea of yourself, these thoughts that are laying there on the bottom, some in the middle, some near the top, and every wave, every air movement churns in, and up pops a thought that's perfect to you for that condition. And that thought is nothing but your past. That thought is nothing but a congealed kind of energy. That's all it is, a congealed form produced by a certain amount of attention over time. That's all a thought is. And everything moves, that great swizzle stick of the cosmos stirs everything up, and for each stirring up pops the equivalent thought necessary to you. Because as life turns, you can be in a room with five people, they'll all have five completely different thoughts. Which proves that it's not the world that's turning that produces the tormented thoughts or the triumphant ones. But rather that there's something inside of the unique makeup of an individual's mind, his brain, her mind, how it's been put together, that as the world turns, it brings up instantaneously. Have you ever seen how a storm, like even on a lake, you know, all that sediment comes up, or you look at a stormy ocean and flotsam and jetsam from everywhere, things that have been buried on the bottom of the ocean for 50 years maybe. Listen! Shake it off! You think the sediment is yourself. And that sediment is nothing but thoughts that are stuffed with what you didn't do, who you weren't, what could have happened if only he had been this or she had been there, and all that turning, every thought popping up, and everyone that pops up because it comes with a trail of associated thoughts and feelings claims your life, and you go, that's mine, that's me. That's me. That thought, that's me, for sure that's me. I know it is because I can see the whole reason for it. I would never think this way towards you if you hadn't have been like this or if mom hadn't have said that. Can you see at all what I'm talking about? Because it's critical that you do. Because if you don't, you will spend your life saying I to thoughts and feelings that are not I. That don't belong to you. They're not yours. Listen to me. As you are, it's true. You are essentially nothing at this point other than an expression of the accumulation of your own past. That's pretty much it for human beings. That's what it means to be spiritually asleep. To walk around being nothing but the expression of resistance to or the embrace of your past as it reformulates itself. That's pretty much what human beings are in their sleep. But that's not all you are. That is not all you are. You are a vessel. And in that vessel, along with that ocean of thoughts and feelings that have been produced by experience through the ages, there lives something that is not part of that system. There lives something that is intelligent, that is kind, that is good, that is seeing. And it is that which is yours. And you don't recognize what is yours because that which is not yours continues to draw you into its life so it can have your own. Now, let's look at this list because we have to keep going here. These are things that are not yours. And the reason we're going over this is so that we can begin to understand when certain conditions take place, we can have a moment, maybe a chance to see, well, this is interesting. I always thought this was mine. Number one, the state of other human beings. The state of other human beings. That's not yours. How many of you know that you take the state of other human beings as being yours? You're with somebody and they get negative. By God, you better fix them or you better get away. You better work that out so she's not suffering the way she is, because if she's suffering like this, I'm going to suffer, which is the real root of why you want to fix it. That's not yours. The state of another human being is not yours. Number two, the reaction you have to their state. How many of you get negative when people are negative? And you're pretty justified, aren't you? I would never be on fire like this if you weren't such an angry person. Why do you have to yell? Couldn't you just talk to me nicely? Because I wouldn't be burning like this if you hadn't lit a fire. So when you are like that, are you not saying that you think that your reaction to other people is you? Aren't you? You'll see all of these things are not yours. Number three of things that are not yours. The fate of others. Oh, you love to figure out how to get even. Oh, just give me a chance. Let me somehow or other figure out what to do with that person who did what they did. Oh, man. Or, boy, if I don't watch out for this person and see that they make it to the top of the hill, I'm going to be dragged down with them and I don't want to go through it, so I'll do what I have to do, which has nothing to do with love. Nothing to do with love. It's fear. The fate of others, not yours. Number four of things that are not yours. This is a great one. Tomorrow's not yours. Where did you get the idea that tomorrow is yours? You know where you got it from? The thought that tells you unless something happens tomorrow the way I've imagined it, something bad's going to happen to me now. So the thought of tomorrow is done what? It's called on an image that you have of what you need to be happy. And the more you call on the image of what you need to be happy tomorrow, the more miserable you are today. Congratulations, you just got the reward of clinging to what's not yours. What man taking thought can add one cubit to his stature? Take no thought for the morrow. You can find 10,000 different ways to say that as long as a person thinks that tomorrow is theirs, they will be tormented today. Period. How about this for what is not yours? If only you could learn it. Yesterday. Oh, do you love to spend time in yesterday? And where are you, by the way, when you're spending time in yesterday? Thinking about how you disappointed that person or how you disappointed yourself or how if things had just turned a little bit differently that you wouldn't be like you are. Where are you when you're in yesterday? Are you in something that is your own? Or are you in the life of an image, an idea, a thought, whose life, which is already not living, you are borrowing for your sense of life? Which is it? And you know the answer. The past isn't yours. It never has been, and it never can be. Number six of things that are yours and things that are not. This is the list of what is not yours. What others think about you? How much time do you spend thinking about what others are thinking about you? Now, you may not think that you do that, but I can tell you that every time you pull your pants up or flip your hair or do whatever you're doing because you're about to walk into a room, that the only reason you're going through those social machinations is because you're expecting to receive a flattery or avoiding somebody looking at you with that weird face that you get sometimes. What others think of you. What a nightmare. What a nightmare that when the thought passes through you that you have to appear in any way at all as being anything at all, you claim it. What a nightmare. Why? Because whose life are you living at that moment? Is it your life? Would you contradict and compromise yourself for the sake of what always turns out to be nothing? Or are you living out the life of a thought that you've carried with you since you were small that said, unless I become something that is recognized by the people around me, then I've achieved nothing and become as such? Whose life? You know the answer. It's not your life. It's the life of a thought, a tormented thought. And yes, tormented thoughts live inside of human beings. Absolutely. Only they don't present themselves as tormenting thoughts and feelings when they're asking you to free you, to free them from their own torment. You can't free the past by thinking about that. Number 8 of the things that are not yours. The need to explain yourself. The need to explain yourself. How many of you explain yourself, justify yourself? You know what it means to justify yourself. It sure feels like it's mine when I'm getting ready to try to explain why I did what I did to somebody, aren't you? Don't you? I say, boy, this is mine. Oh, you know, and if you could see past the false identification, what is it exactly about that feeling of mine that pushes you to claim that feeling, that need to justify? Have you ever looked at it closely? It's fear. Fear is the only reason a person justifies or explains themselves to themselves or anyone else. No other reason. So when you say I, when you identify, claim that thought that says you need to go talk or explain yourself to someone else, you have just done what? You've just claimed the cuckoo, haven't you? Haven't you? You've just claimed something that has compromised you by the very fact that you've said I to it. Because fear is at the root of justifying your life.
Hear Guy Finley in person. Guy lives and teaches in Merlin, Oregon, where he speaks 4 times each week at beautiful nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. Visit us anytime and hear Guy's life-transforming principles in a friendly, serene, and inspiring environment. Visit GuyFinley.org or call 541-476-1200 to learn more about friendly ongoing classes. You are not alone in your quest for a new life. At Life of Learning, you'll meet others who are also seeking higher understanding, and you'll experience the power and inspiration of hearing Guy Finley in person. Plan to visit us and take the next step in your spiritual development. For information, call 541-476-1200, 541-476-1200, or visit GuyFinley.org. That's GUYFINLEY.org.
Number 9 of things that are not yours. Any negative state. Any negative state. Now, how many of you know that quite often you're sure that that negative state is yours? Well, here's one proof of it. How many of you ever hate yourself after you've hated someone? How many of you ever feel guilty after you've gone after something? You can fill in the blanks for yourself, and you must. Any time that you rush, you have said to that thought that says you must, you have to, that compulsive desire, you have said you're mine. Because I know you're mine because you've come to help me. You've come to get me through this. Just hurry up. That's all I have to do. Those negative thoughts and feelings, they are not yours, but they belong to a system that presents itself as being yours. Let's get on to it because I have to go on. Last of whatever, of things that are not yours, anything at all that defines you. Anything at all that defines you. Anything at all. You catch yourself talking to yourself about what kind of person you are, what you could do. How many of you know that day in and day out, there is a certain part of you that is measuring you according to what you did, so that in finding that definition of yourself as being someone who achieved or didn't, then you know the next step to take. Do you understand the question? Anything that defines you defiles you, because your true nature is undefinable, indefinable. Your nature cannot be thought. Therefore, it can't be defined. Period. Now, what do all of these things that we've been talking about, these things that are not yours, what do they all have in common? Anybody want to guess? I'll tell you. What they all have in common is that they have their origin and no existence apart from thought, from images. Every one of those things that are not yours have in common the fact that they are rooted in, have their life in an image. And we've been talking about this. What is the life of an image? First of all, is it a real life? How many of you have an image of being someone in the past, either successful or sorrowful? You understand what I'm saying. Is that you? No, but unattended, it dwells inside of you day in and day out. And then when the conditions are right, the meteorological conditions appear. Meteorological. Meteorological. When that's kind of funny. When that meteorological condition comes up and it stirs up what it stirs up, what is it stirring up? Please listen. In that moment, it stirs up inside of you something that at once brings this image up, this thought of yourself, and then compares the moment you're in to that image. Instantaneously that takes place, and in the comparison is this conflict, is rooted this sense of oneself that is doing what? I'm addressing the image. I'm not addressing life. Life could be doing all kinds of things, and it is. I'm out of life now. See, I'm not in life anymore. I'm out of life. I'm in the past. I'm literally a captive of the content of my own past. These images that the world, life has brought up, and there it is, and now it's me. This is mine. Because the image brings up everything that needs what? To keep it in place. To either change it or protect it or drop it. All the time, the image producing inside of the human being, a set of plans. A way in which to get rid of the problem. And what is it that's setting the ground for that? What is it, the basis of all that? Thought. Thought that is not you. Thought that is not you. Now, last point on this, then the exercise. Can you, at least with your mind, understand that whatever image appears inside of you, that who you are, your true nature, cannot possibly be this image, no matter how grand it is or how ungrand it is? How many of you understand that? It's impossible. Can you also understand that you are this ocean that I was talking about, that has in it more forms of thought, more experiences stored away that you couldn't name if your life depended on it? People, you got to go find somebody, try to drop one little dead starfish at a time and rid the sea of what's suffering, of its suffering, by trying to work, change these things according to what you don't want them to be. I don't want to be someone who. I want to be this. Who is it that wants to be this if they're not the opposite of that image? And how successful have you been like that, by the way? Not to mention how painful it is, day in and day out, to be awash, to be awash. See, how do I say this? It's pretty interesting. Each one of those thoughts is a microcosm of a world. Each thought is a microcosm, because each one contains in scale everything necessary to support its existence. So each thought that comes up, a person gets washed away in it, because they get washed away in everything that's moved by that thought. All of the trails and connections, links move to it. And a person that spend their life, you will spend, if you don't wake up, you will spend your whole life thinking that something that is not you is you. So the exercise, it's very simple, really. We talked about 10 ways to know things that are not yours. You should make up your own list, but inside of that list is everything you need to know, because every time that you catch yourself involved in one of those things, here's what you do. Ready? You just set it down. You set it down. It's not yours. It's not yours. You set it down. You know, who picks up something that's not their own? How many of you are thieves? No one wants to be a thief. Pick up something that's not mine. Set it down. But the rub is this, which is why no one does it. To set it down means you're going to be alone. To set it down means you're going to be alone. What does it mean you're going to be alone? Not the way you're alone now. What you call alone is keeping the company of a bunch of crummy thoughts and feelings telling you what being alone is. You got bad company, that's why you feel alone. No. To set it down, which you could do right now while you're listening to me, means that you're going to be alone in the light of that understanding that what you see is not yours. When you see that thought, by the fact that you can see it, it's not yours. When you see that negative state, by the fact that you can see it, it's not yours. And you can begin, if you will, understanding that there you are, you're saying that all of a sudden your mind, all the compulsion, compulsive, push here, push there, get everything, get, push. And right in the middle of it, you can realize, this can't be my own. See, here the problem is that what's not your own tells you if you'll serve it, one day you'll have your own. Doesn't it? This tells you, look, serve me, I'll lead you to peace. Serve me, I'll lead you to profitability. Serve me, I'll lead you to strength and power. Serve me, I'll show you security. Serve me, I'll show you a peace that you won't believe. And you serve what isn't yours, and what could be yours is lost. Because the only way you're going to know what's yours is when you're willing to be without what is not. Because what's yours knows its own. What is yours knows its own. That's even in the New Testament, I believe. Christ said, I know my own. So it is with the light that lives inside of a human being. It knows its own. And it clearly shows what is not its own. And we have to learn what it means to live from the part of us that's capable of seeing without going into great detail. It's not complicated. If you're worried, it's because you are clinging to something that's not your own. And I'm not talking about the object. I'm talking about the nature that says without it, you won't have something. You're sitting there, you're frightened. You're clinging to something that's not your own. Not because of what the mind points to as being the source of the fear, but the nature that believes without possessing it or coming into it somehow, you won't amount to something. What won't amount to something? How can you be more than what God made you? But thought tells you you can. So the exercise is simple. Set it down. Just set it down. And then leave it there. Because that's the task. It's nothing to catch a thought passing itself off as you, trying to draw you into its life. But to be willing to set it down and then to keep your attention in the present moment, to keep your life in that light that showed you that that life isn't yours, that's the task. Because if you'll be willing to do that and then be alone for however long it takes for that wrong relationship to pass, which it will, then will pass into you a new relationship with the light that has always been your own and always known its own since time began. It's your work. Do it.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit GuyFinley.com. where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at GuyFinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.